Hello, this is Steve Ferrillo reading Time Magazine for August 26, 2019. Cover story, it's his country, the wild ride of Lil Nas X. Culture, whose country? The distinctive American music has always reflected the complicated lives of the people who make it. By John Meacham and Tim McGraw. He was falling apart, brilliant and tortured, devout and driven. Johnny Cash had been discovered in the Memphis of Sun Records, the musical milieu that gave America Elvis Presley, and had built a career that by the late 1960s he seemed determined to destroy through an addiction to pills. Lost in a fog of speed and drink, Cash missed shows and was exiled from the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville after he kicked out the floodlights of the stage at the fabled Ryman Auditorium. His first marriage in tatters, Cash was in love with June Carter of country music's iconic Carter family, but June refused to marry him until he sobered up. At last, June and her parents isolated Cash at his house near Nashville to draw him out and get him right. After white-knuckling his way to sobriety, Cash accepted a January 1968 gig at Folsom State Prison in California, the setting for his legendary Folsom Prison Blues. "I knew this was it," Cash recalled, "my chance to make up for all the times I messed up." The men in the audience had suffered too, and Cash's voice and experience formed an inherent connection between singer and convict. The same guy who sang, "I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die," sang, "Were you there when they crucified my Lord?" in the same show. Cash's daughter, Roseanne, said, "His music, like his life, was complex and contradictory, as is America, which has always been the source material for the sound we know as country music. The point is a running theme of Ken Burns's illuminating and engrossing new documentary, Country Music, which premieres September 15th on PBS. Arguably the most influential interpreter of American history of the past three decades, Burns tells the story of the genre in his trademark style, and in so doing makes it gracefully and implicitly clear that country music reflects not just red America, but blue America too. The music's roots lie partly in the 1920s, a period like our own with massive shifts in the economy, culture, population, and media, dividing the country into those who embraced the future and those who clung to the past. Tellingly, country music was marketed as a nostalgic product from the beginning, so-called old-time music, even though it was quite new. Such reminders are helpful at a moment when country is in the midst of a renewed debate over the nature of its sound and the related question of who counts as part of its club. Thanks to the success of hip-hop influence hits from Blanco Brown and Lil Nas X, whose Old Town Road has spent a record 19 weeks atop the Billboard charts, and the genre-bending performers Miranda Lambert and Maren Morris, the industry is undergoing a period of healthy redefinition and soul-searching. In some ways, these questions are not so different from the ones the broader nation is asking itself in the age of Trump. So what is country? Or to put it more plainly, can a historically white ethos, in Burns's film Kris Kristofferson calls country probably the white man's soul music, make room for the voices and visions of an increasingly diverse America? The answer, much like the music itself, is more complicated than even its fans tend to realize. Debating what is country is a tradition nearly as old as country itself. In 1975, Waylon Jennings wrote, "Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way?" which lamented the trend away from the kind of music Hank Williams created and towards a more polished commercial sound. Charlie Rich would be banned from the now primetime telecast CMA Awards for burning the envelope that declared pop superstar John Denver country music's entertainer of the year, as he did in 1975. Whenever a generation puts less emphasis on the bedrock sounds of fiddle, acoustic guitar, and steel guitar, the argument begins anew. Country came not from the affluent and the accepted, but from the fringes of America, from the hills and hollows, from Sunday morning and Saturday night, from barrios and blues clubs. In Georgia in the 1920s, the state where a new Ku Klux Klan had been founded in 1915, fiddling John Carson gained popularity, his music resonating in a country that was rapidly urbanizing. Even people who had known only city life liked to indulge in reminiscence about simpler times. Country music is full of songs about little old log cabins that people have never lived in, the old country church that people have never attended, the historian Bill C. Malone says in country music. But it spoke for a lot of people who were beginning forgotten, who were being forgotten, or who felt they were being forgotten. One songwriter defined country music as three chords and the truth, but the editor of Variety in 1926 called country music illiterate and ignorant, poor white trash with the intelligence of morons. Burns's film, however, shows that the music and its makers and promoters were anything but ignorant or moronic, and they certainly weren't simple. Carson, for instance, benefited from the rise of radio as a mass medium. WSB in Atlanta, call letters that stood for Welcome South Brother, put him on the air, and together with a growing market for phonographic records, the twin technologies helped fuel the creation of what became known as the music business. There it all was, even in the beginning. Nostalgia and newness, sentiment and sales. Ralph Peer was a successful producer of what were called race records when he noticed Carson's appeal. Before long, Peer had discovered both the Carter Family singers and Jimmy Rogers, whom he recorded in a 24-hour period in Bristol, Tennessee. The Carters' music was rooted in gospel, the sounds of Sunday morning. Rogers in the carousing world of Saturday night, thus setting up ongoing themes in a genre that touched on both redemption and sin. Still, the ways country has been marketed from the start have obscured its other faces. Long considered the soundtrack of conservatism, country is in fact more complicated and more interesting than the prevailing caricature would have it. There's always been a strain of protest alongside the sentimental patriotism. For all of the beer-swilling, we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way lyrics, see Toby Keith's post 9/11 courtesy of the red, white, and blue, the angry American. There's Cash defending prisoners or Native Americans, and Loretta Lynn warning her man not to come home a-drinking with lovin' on your mind, and touting the virtues of the pill and ode to a woman's right to her own body that became a bestseller despite being banned by many top radio stations. Country is just not about breaking hearts, it can be about opening them, too. If the themes of country have been more inclusive than many realize, the makeup of those who perform it has been far too narrow. To put it mildly, racial and ethnic diversity has been the rare exception in country rather than the rule. Blues and African American gospel was an essential tributary for the genre as a whole, and there were early black musicians who played important roles. But pioneers like DeFord Bailey and stars like Charlie Pride have long been a rarity in a field dominated by white men. The irony is thick. One of the greatest country songs in history, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, began as an African-American spiritual. There have been moments when it appeared the doors were opening wider. In the early 1960s, Ray Charles had a huge hit with his album Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music, which featured covers of country classics such as Hank Williams' Hey Good Lookin', the Everly Brothers' Bye Bye Love, and Don Gibson's I Can't Stop Loving You. As Willie Nelson put it, the pianist better known for rhythm and blues did more for country music than any one artist has ever done. Charles himself offered the longest of views. You take country music, you take black music, he said, and you got the same goddamn thing exactly. More than half a century later, the rise of Lil Nas X and Blanco Brown offers a hopeful sign that in a world where all lines are blurring, broad audience acceptance of artists of color may be the next big front in country. Perhaps country will also remedy the lack of commercial avenues for female artists. Despite legends like Lynn and Dolly Parton, you would be hard-pressed to find any decade where more than two or three female artists would be ranked by Billboard in the year-end top 10 artist rankings. The success of artists like Kacey Musgraves, who has built a major career and won multiple Grammy Awards by finding a way to connect to the fans without the filter of mainstream radio, points the way to a more equitable future. Things will always be changing in country music. That's as it should be. We can embrace tradition and we can embrace the current sounds of the day. That is, after all, what our musical forebears did so brilliantly. At its heart, country is the music of inclusion and universality, and there must be an open door, open ears and hearts, for artists who don't look like Jimmy Rogers or Hank Williams. Country is songs with stories for everyone, our life experience played out in 3.5 minutes. Complexity is country's friend, not its enemy. And more people need to realize that. That includes matters of politics. Ever since the Dixie Chicks set off a fierce backlash in 2003 on the eve of the Iraq War when they said they were ashamed that George W. Bush was from Texas, artists have been perhaps understandably skittish about directly addressing politics in their music. To be true to its roots, though, musicians, like any other citizens, need to be forever open to speaking truth when the time seems right. In this way, as in many things, Johnny Cash shows us the way. In 1970, Richard Nixon invited Cash to perform at the White House. Ambivalent about the war in Vietnam, Cash nevertheless accepted the president's offer. Then he learned that Nixon wanted him to sing Welfare Cadillac, a song that made fun of the poor. Cash refused and performed his What is Truth, a meditation on the reasonableness of those questioning war and social conventions. Among the lyrics, the old world's Wake into a newborn day, which to Cash, to country music broadly, and to the nation itself, is indeed an ancient and recurring truth. Old Town, New Road. How 20-year-old upstart Lil Nas X used the internet to beat Nashville at its own game, by Andrew Chow. Lil Nas X is getting bored at a bowling alley in Midtown Manhattan. He plays a giant Connect Four, then ping pong, and then even as he rechecks his phone, he races back and forth between two lanes, pins clattering in surround sound as he bowls one spare after another. But for the 20-year-old rapper, singer, and songwriter, who less than a year ago was a college dropout sleeping on his sister's floor, second best gets boring and fast. On his next turn, in a whirl of goofy energy, he spins around, pointing his black Air Jordans away from the pins, and flicks the ball backward down the hardwood lane. Rather than sinking into the gutter, the ball rolls perfectly down the center, knocking down all 10. He collapses onto the floor, yelping and pumping his fists. It's tempting to read this moment as a perfect metaphor for Lil Nas's career. An amateur flings something into the universe, only to luck into a massive win. When his debut single, Old Town Road, exploded online early this year and began climbing the charts, industry prognosticators anticipated a quick rise and fall. 4 months later, Old Town Road has defied all expectations. It's now the longest-running number one song in history, having occupied the top spot on the Billboard Hot 100 for 19 weeks, blocking new singles from Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, and Ed Sheeran, and dethroning the previous record holders, Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men's 1995 hit One Sweet Day, and Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, and Justin Bieber's 2017 single, Despacito. It's been streamed more than 1 billion times on Spotify alone. As Lil Nas himself put it on Twitter, it's crazy how any baby born after March has not lived in a world where Old Town Road wasn't number one. All of this has made Old Town Road the defining sound of the year, a slurry, genre-busting interpolation of two quintessential American musical genres, country and hip-hop. Not coincidentally, it's a perfect meme, catchy, quick, self-referential, and subversive. Sample lyric, riding on the horse, ha, you can whip your Porsche. Yet it was written solely by Lil Nas X using a beat he purchased online for $30. It's weird, beguiling, and inarguably fun, a tonic for these times. A hit song doesn't need to stand for anything, of course, but the rise of Lil Nas X represents a larger moment in our culture. Phenomena that once solely existed in digital spaces, the idea of canceling someone, the contagious popularity of a nonsensical thing, the rise of influencer culture, have become a part of everyday life. Old Town Road is the sensibility of the internet, which thrives on juxtaposition of opposites, playing on your car radio and as you shop at the supermarket. Yet even from his perch at the top of the charts, Lil Nas X is still an outlier. There aren't many black stars in country music. There aren't many queer stars in hip-hop. There aren't many queer black stars in American culture, point blank. The fact that Lil Nas has risen so far and so fast testifies not only to his skill, but also to the erosion of the system that for generations kept artists like him on the sidelines. As streaming and social media have democratized pathways to success, hip-hop, once an outlet for disenfranchised people of color, has become the dominant sound of popular music. More and more in recent years, hip-hop has been merging with country, a genre long associated with white conservatism. All this has the people who usually make money off stars like Lil Nas X questioning long-held assumptions about who consumes what, how, and when. He's been able to break down cultural barriers as well as pre-existing notions of musical genres. Ron Perry, the chairman and CEO of Columbia Records, Lil Nas's label, tells Time. He has remained authentic and true to his art, and this is just the beginning. At a time when debates about categorization and identity are ubiquitous, Lil Nas X represents a more unified vision of the future, one in which a young queer black man can dominate popular culture by being unapologetically himself. Everything lined up for this moment to take me to this place, he says now, not to sound self-centered, but it feels like I'm chosen in a way to do this stuff. For the history of music, artists like Lil Nas were the exception. Now, by definition, Lil Nas is the rule. His critics might say he's just another flash in the pan, destined to go the way of Macarena and the Doggy. Yet many signs point toward this as new normal. The spirit of the internet springs to life, then becomes the biggest pop star of the summer. Huge portions of the music industry are still run like an assembly line. Songwriters gather in camps to layer mathematical hooks over sticky beats. The formulaic results are cut by artists and sent to radio, where they climb the charts on the merits of their cross-generational appeal. But over the past decade, the origin stories of stars have changed dramatically. Piracy, streaming, and social media have reshaped the industry, allowing rising stars to find fans without the help of industry support. On digital services like the short-form video platform TikTok, previously musical.ly, and the audio platform SoundCloud, a class of primarily hip-hop artists are racking up huge streaming numbers. Idiosyncratic interlopers like Blueface, Juice WRLD, and Lil Pump have forced the music industry to incorporate a wider array of sounds and scour these digital platforms in hopes of folding these new talents into their existing system. The music industry has always subsumed niche or local scenes. Punk, grunge, and hip-hop started out small before they became pop phenomena. But what used to require A&R savvy is now quantifiable by anyone. This is the democratization of the music industry that people were hoping for when social media first became available, says Bill Wordy, the director of Syracuse University's music industry program and the former editorial director of Billboard. As a true digital native, Lil Nas X understands this intuitively. When he recorded Old Town Road last fall, he was hoping it could be his way out of an unhappy life. Born Montero Lamora Hill outside Atlanta in 1999, Lil Nas grew up poor, living with one parent or another. His mother and father split when he was six. As he spent most of his teenage years alone, he began to live on the internet, and particularly Twitter, creating memes that showed his disarming wit and pop culture savvy. But while his posts earned him a devoted following online, out in the real world, his circumstances felt grim. He was in the process of dropping out of college and frequently fighting with his parents. It was like, I'm able to go viral, but I'm not promoting anything that's going to help me, he says, until music came along. A gifted vocalist since he was a child, his father is a gospel singer, Lil Nas began writing and recording songs in his closet. When around last Halloween, he stumbled across a banjo-driven beat by the teenage Dutch producer Young Keo, he saw an opportunity to combine trap, a southern-born hip-hop subgenre propelled by vicious bass and crawling tempos, with country, which was experiencing a surge of popularity on the internet. It's been called the Yeehaw Agenda. Picture SpongeBob, SquarePants, and a cowboy hat. Because it's two polar opposites coming together, it's funny no matter what it is, he says. Since then, he's fully embraced the country aesthetic, performing in an impressive array of brightly colored cowboy hats and fringe, portraying an old-school Western outlaw in the epic Old Town Road video, and even designing his own line for Wrangler jeans. Like veteran songwriters, Nas had studied the tropes of popular music, bold beats, catchy lyrics, and short length. And like the best digital creators, he knew he had to turn that music into a movement. He estimates he made more than 100 short videos to promote Old Town Road, plugging it into existing memes or creating his own. People were like, "Where are these memes coming from?" he says. "If you see something going around the internet, people want to join in." Sure enough, the song was picked up by canny online influencers as millions of people went on to don cowboy outfits and dance to the song TikTok, Old Town Road. Boosted by the fact that Billboard now includes streaming numbers in its chart positions, began a renegade climb up the country charts. Then something shocking happened. The song was banned. In March, the same month Columbia Records signed Lil Nas, Billboard removed Old Town Road from the Hot Country Songs chart, claiming it did not have enough country elements to belong there. The incident set off a furor, with many saying its exclusion echoed country music's uneasy racial history. Nashville has been dominated by white artists since the birth of country music, even though that genre has strong roots in black musical style like blues. Darius Rucker, frontman of the hit rock band Hootie and the Blowfish, says he faced resistance because of his race when he started making country music 11 years ago. "I was doing radio tours and one guy looked me in the eye and said, 'I love the song, but I don't think I'll play it,'" he remembers. The perception was that the audience wouldn't accept an African-American singer. Nashville is a notoriously territorial industry, with a long tradition of snubbing country songs that don't originate from inside the system. A look at the country airplay charts, which reflects ways on country radio stations, shows a world that favors white men singing about religion. Blake Shelton's God's Country, The Troops, Justin Moore's The Ones That Didn't Make It Back Home, and the genre of country music itself. Chris Young's Raised on Country. On that chart, Old Town Road stalled at number 50. Nashville's DJs stuck to their regularly scheduled programming. "It's a stupid little ditty and earworm," says Kyle Coronios, the founder of the website Saving Country Music. "The people inside country music aren't even paying attention to it." Billy Ray Cyrus was. After being told that Lil Nas wanted him on a remix, he happily recorded a new verse in the wake of the song's removal. The new version shot all the way to the top of the Billboard Hot 100, an unprecedented 19 weeks later, it's still there. For a lot of reasons, Lil Nas didn't initially plan to come out. He had been taught from a young age that homosexuality is never going to be okay, and he feared he would lose fans. "I know the people who listen to this the most, and they're not accepting of homosexuality," he says. While hip-hop stars like Frank Ocean and Tyler, the Creator, have come out as queer, the specter of homophobia still looms large. But during Pride Month, something changed for Lil Nas. "I never would have done that if I wasn't, in a way, pushed by the universe," he says. "In June, I'm seeing pride flags everywhere and seeing couples holding hands. Little stuff like that." He first came out to his father and sister earlier in June and then broke the news on Twitter several weeks later. It was a historic moment in no small part because of how casually he went about it. "Thought I made it obvious," he wrote on Twitter, pointing out a rainbow on his album cover. He had some haters, but they were quickly and summarily dismissed, often by him personally. He wrote on Twitter that the next person to say something offensive would be getting kissed. Meanwhile, Old Town Road continued to rack up millions of streams, extending its run atop the Billboard Hot 100. Now Lil Nas's playful expression of his sexuality is just another part of his self-deprecating online brand. "Last year I was sleeping on my sister's floor, had no money, struggling to get plays on my music, suffering from daily headaches. Now I'm gay," he tweeted at the end of July. A lot of walls were taken down by the song, Cyrus says. "I think a lot of artists out there can look at this and say, hey man, this is a green light." It's a sweltering Friday afternoon in July, and the Twitter offices in New York have been brought to a screeching euphoric halt. A crowd of cowboy hat-clad employees cheer on Lil Nas as he wanders their halls in a purple Pyre Moss jacket and mismatched earrings, handing out pressed sandwiches in honor of his follow-up single, Panini. Jack Dorsey, The company CEO jokingly gives Lil Nas his title for the day. He's had many surreal firsts over the past few months, from performing at Glastonbury to cooking with Gordon Ramsay, but perhaps none means as much to him as this one. Twitter was his first community, the origin of his superpowers. He still regularly tweets more than 10 times a day to his 2.6 million followers, who revel in his goofy memes, shameless self-promotion, and sharp cultural commentary. If Lil Nas is nervous, he doesn't show it. He strides around the building with a rambunctious childlike irreverence. He delights in using his custom ID to unlock the building's turnstiles, freeze frames while leaving rooms, and unflinchingly tells Dorsey that he's fired. During a skit, Dorsey asks him if he has any questions. Lil Nas immediately deadpans, "How's your relationship with your father?" When Lil Nas isn't engaging with another human, his mischievous energy dissipates, and he's back to his phone. Lil Nas is constantly reading and responding to comments, watching videos, looking at news, and laughing at memes. He admits to being 100% addicted to his phone. According to one study, half of Gen X is online 10 hours a day. They admit to suffering from widespread anxiety and mental health issues. Lil Nas says he's dealt with acute anxiety and still adjusting to the pressures of fame and nonstop in-person interaction. It gets overwhelming, he says. I just shut down everybody. I'm still a loner in a lot of ways. Yet much as he needs downtime, he knows he can't afford it. Even if he's capable of logging off, if he doesn't keep up with the steady stream of content, the social media world could move on to someone else without blinking. After all, a new wave would-be Lil Nas X's has already arrived. Swaco the Child, a rapper whose song Fast went viral on TikTok in April, signed to Atlantic, while Y2K and BBNO Dollars pushed their song La La through the unconventional digital campaigns until it was snatched up by Columbia. In June, another country trap concoction by a black artist, Blanco Brown's The Get Up, sailed to the top of the country charts thanks to a TikTok meme, massive streaming numbers, and this time the approval of Nashville. According to John Marks, a former Nashville DJ who is now global head of country at Spotify, five of the top six most streamed country tracks globally the week Old Town Road bested the number one record were by Lil Nas, while the remaining one was The Get Up. Now Marks says the same people that were saying that doesn't belong on the country charts are now saying we need to find something like it. Lil Nas's seductive trap hit Panini already has 149 million streams on Spotify, more than the Beatles' Help or Madonna's Like a Prayer. When that song has run its course, he'll release the video for Rodeo, another Western-tinged song that features Cardi B, and then a slew of new songs that also experiment with genre bending, Lil Nas says. He's working with bigger producers now, including Pharrell Williams. Pop culture moves at light speed, and its past is littered with one-hit wonders who were convinced, at least for a brief moment, that they ruled the world. Back at the bowling alley, Lil Nas is determined to make his success last. Seeing digital numbers, it's a good feeling. It goes so quickly, though, he says, you have to keep going. After celebrating that backward strike, he hops off the floor and snatches up another ball to try his improbable, innovative technique again. Well, it looks like I'm all out of time for this week. This has been Steve Ferrella reading Time Magazine for August 26, 2019. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, God bless.